It's always frustrating when you play with a guy who carries a 12 cap and shoots 79. Like, what am I supposed to do? And just these guys who show up at these tournaments and just shamelessly win every time. It's just like, why? Why do kids get into hockey? Why do kids get into golf? Why do they get into soccer? Because it's fun for them. They're out there with their friends playing a game. I think people are doing their kids a disservice if they're playing one sport year round. I don't think they're maximizing their potential if they focus on one thing only. The nerves themselves were not that bad. They were definitely there, but a little better than I expected, to be honest. And that's definitely not the reason I went out and shot poor scores. It was just, I didn't have the right setup and once it got away from me, I wasn't grinding as hard as I could.
There is a podcast brewing that's about to take over podcasting for good. The only podcast that you are going to need to tune into day in, day out, is the Member Guest Podcast.
If I can hit it down the middle of the fairway, that's great. But again, with the driver right now, the driver sucks.
John Daly, and you're listening to the Member Guest Podcast. Rip it.
All right. When I tell my dad I'm talking to the all-time NHL hits leader, is that still accurate?
Still accurate. Yep. To this day.
Yeah. Mr. Cal Clutterbuck, where are you coming from today? You in Long Island, New York?
Yeah, I'm on Long Island here in Manhasset, New York, where I've been for the last 13, 14 years now since I left the beautiful state of Minnesota.
And that's where it's going to be? Is that like full time? The kids are going to get raised there? You don't have any plans to leave or anything like that?
No, there's nothing that's really, I would need a reason to leave, whether it's an opportunity or something. But my kids are all born and raised here. I had one born in Minnesota my last year there in 2012. But the rest of them have been born and raised here. And, you know, I got that one that was born in Minnesota is an eighth grader now, going into high school. So just to give you a scope of how long I've been here and how difficult it is to take kids out of the place that they've called home for their entire lives. So, and we love it. You know, I mean we spent a lot of time and energy kind of making sure that we became a part of the community when I got traded here. My wife included did a great job with that. We got a lot of friends here outside of what I was doing playing hockey. So we're happy here.
Yeah, I can't believe it's been that long. I was talking to my wife last night. She asked what I was doing this morning. I was like, well, I get to record with, do you remember this name, Cal Clutterbuck? She goes, yeah, is he playing or what's going on? I was like, it's actually been, I think, like 12, 13 years since you left Minnesota. And was all that time on the Islanders? You didn't play any other teams? Wow. So yeah, you spent a lot of time in New York and now you're doing some broadcasting for them too?
Yeah, I'm doing color commentary and some pregame, postgame, intermission stuff with MSG Networks for the Islanders, and it's been good. Yeah, no, I played 11 seasons here, so I'm, you know, very much an Islander for life. Thought I was going to be in Minnesota for life when I first got there. I loved it there too, but you know, fortunately that didn't work out. But I've been here. Yeah, I've been retired almost 2 years now, so yeah, it's 13 years.
Yeah, and our boys just played each other. What was that? Just that past weekend?
It was Saturday night, I think. Yeah, it was on Saturday night. Good game, actually.
Yeah, went to overtime. Were you here for that? So are you traveling or do you only do stuff in Long Island?
Normally I do travel. I'm doing 60 of the 82 games. There's 10 that are covered by the national networks, which we get off. And then I just happen to take some off because had a big AU hockey tournament down in Philly last weekend, so
are you
I couldn't miss that. Yeah, I'm assistant coaching, but when I'm there, when I can be there, I'm coaching. Yeah, I'm behind the bench. That's which is fun. It's hilarious. Hilarious.
What's it like coaching 8 year olds?
No, these kids are hilarious, man. Like, you know, it's just you're just trying to keep their attention for, you know, as long as you can. Practices are just a complete, you know, babysitting session where you just get in line, stop hitting each other. They're swinging their sticks at each other in line. One kid falls, the domino effect, the whole line goes down. But it's, you know, it's fun. It's fun. I just want to try and make it. My goal is to try and make it as fun as I can for them. Cause like at that age, that's like the development of like love for the game age. You know, it's not really time for you know, trying to turn them into the next Connor McDavid. So I'm just going to like chuck a puck out there and let them go get it.
Yeah, you might be a little bit more familiar with this than me, but it seems there's been a shift recently with like kids in sports. Like I've a lot of the guys I've heard talk over the last few years, like they all talk about how when they grew up, they were like multi-sport athletes. And that I'd say a lot of professional athletes would tell you that being a multi-sport athlete helps when you do start to like go into one sport. Are you seeing that start to change? I mean, I know you're coaching 8U and maybe this isn't like your expertise, but I am curious on your opinion of like, it feels like now kids, you know, they start playing a sport and like their parents, they like play it year round. It's like just playing that sport. I'm just not sure how I feel about it because all the golfers would tell you that, you know, being a multi-sport athlete helps so much with all the different types of, you know, swings and things you got to do with that type of sport. So I'm curious on your opinions there.
Well, it's interesting. I literally just sat down yesterday for like an hour-long interview. I got a friend of mine who owns a production company. He's doing a documentary called The Versatility Paradox, and he wants to talk to a bunch of pro athletes about their experience in exactly that. And my opinion is probably in line with yours. I played everything. You know, I played hockey from middle of September or beginning of September, Labor Day through St. Patrick's Day, and then my bag went in the basement. And, you know, my baseball glove came out. I played baseball all summer. My mom was a phys ed teacher, so I played some odd sports like, you know, handball and volleyball, swam a ton. Like, you know, and like I said this yesterday, it's just so good for not only your physical sort of muscle memory when you're trying to learn new skills in a certain sport, you kind of draw from different places. Your body kind of like has... it learns balance and leverage and, you know, it gets strong in areas that you can't even really mimic in a gym. Like, you know, you get in the gym at 15 years old and you're trying to put on some muscle, but you're trying to do it without hindering your ability to move the way that you move as a young kid, as a young athlete. You're just trying to maintain your youthful athleticism as you age. That's really the purpose of being in the gym. And I think people get it wrong. They try and go into the gym to like learn the movement when you learn a lot better when you're playing. Like, yeah, I think it's just play. Like for kids, it's supposed to be fun, right? Like why do kids get into hockey? Why do kids get into golf? Why do they get into soccer? Because it's fun for them. They're out there with their friends playing a game. And I feel like the mind also has an ability to adapt. When you're talking different sports, you just develop different centers of your brain and you develop different skills when it comes to anticipation, creativity, all those things. I think people are doing their kids a disservice if they're playing one sport year round. I don't think they're going to turn them into the best player. I don't think they're maximizing their potential if they focus on one thing only.
And then, so for you, and I'd say for probably a lot of kids specifically, like, was it multi-sport all the way through high school? And then after high school, you know, that's when you go kind of to the next level and then you're really focusing. But, or like, when was it for you that it was like, all right, I'm pretty good at this hockey thing. I think I'm going to go this route.
Yeah, I think when I went to the OHL is really when I would say I was underage here in the OHL is 11th grade. So in 11th grade, I stopped playing baseball. But the summer leading up to that, I played my regular baseball league. I still played like slow pitch well into my NHL career in the summers. You know, I played a ton of golf. And I would play, I play racket sports in the summer when I was playing hockey in the NHL. Like it never really stopped. It wasn't organized, but you know, everyone's played a little pickleball these days, which is, you know, it's a good little exercise. There's paddle courts at the country club, tennis. My wife likes to play, so I play with her once in a while. There's always another sport in there just to change it up. It's also a good way to just get out there and get some cardio in without having to get on a treadmill or a bike. Like, so I remember the one time what ended my baseball career was, I think my OHL first year in the OHL, I had a little shoulder injury, went back to my high school, 12th grade, was going to play in the high school baseball team. And I was a shortstop and I went to throw my first ball in practice from short to first. And I bounced it like 8 feet in front of me and my arm just like didn't have the range anymore. So I was like, I'm going to play first base from now on, I think. So that was what ended my baseball career. But up until then, I played as much baseball as I did hockey.
Speaking of injuries, I saw a clip. You were talking about It's probably just before COVID, 2019. Is it your left hand?
Yeah.
So you still can't feel anything in your left hand?
No. Like, no,
like,
I don't.
Like completely numb, like to the point that you could, you know, I don't want to get like graphic, but like stab it with something and you wouldn't be able to feel much?
Yeah, so I would feel it like let's say I grab something hot. I wouldn't feel it for like one steamboat, two steamboat, but then it would be like my skin would be peeling off my hand. I would feel it like deep, deep, deep. Like anything that's like really deep, I could feel like a general sort of like pressure, but I don't have like feel. Like I can't grab my car keys. Like when I reach into my golf bag to pull out tees or balls, I can't do it with my left hand. I have to do it with my right. I can hold a pen because I can see it. So like I can, because I'm left-handed. So like I can do those things, but unless I'm like watching what I'm holding, there's a chance I'll drop it.
So I was just gonna ask, how do you play hockey 4 years not feeling that? And then like with golf, like when we started talking a little golf, you're like, I'm just thinking, how the hell is Cal chipping around the greens? Like,
yeah, I had trouble for years. Like I still have trouble sometimes. Like I'm playing in the winter here. I'm playing some golf in the winter here, which is, it might seem crazy, but we've got a couple golf courses to keep the pins in. So when it's like, if it's, you know, 37 and above, we're out there playing. Like I played yesterday. And in the cold, I have a really, really hard time, holding on to the club, even full swings, like driver swings and stuff. I'm very much, the grip on my bottom hand's a little tighter than it normally would be because I have to make sure to hold on. Luckily for full swings, like the interlock helps me keep the club in my hand. And I have feeling in my pinky. So like, that's like my reference point for this hand is, so it's like the feeling gets cut off. Like all of these four fingers here and this palm are all numb. And then I have feeling like on the outside of my hand here. So I use this like as a reference point for like where I'm at, but chipping's tough, like bunkers, chipping, like 6 years of me trying to figure out the new way to like get my release going, which is, it's been kind of annoying because I used to be pretty good around the greens, but.
Well, you've got to be decent because so you carry a plus handicap. You're clearly, if you're out there playing, if you're a sicko like me and you're playing when it's like 40 degrees out, because we got the same thing here in Minnesota, as you may or may not be familiar with, but like there's a couple courses that will just, same thing. They'll figure out a way to open. I think last year you could have played Pioneer Creek every month of the year, you know, including like December, January, February, right? Like they were open.
Yep.
So clearly you love to do it. You found a way to be pretty good at it. I saw you played in the state open as well.
Yeah.
Like when did that obsession come to be? I find a lot of the hockey players love golf, probably just because the seasons, work out well, but you know, you've taken it to a little different level.
Yeah. So, I played a little bit growing up, like I would say an average amount. There was a couple summers at like 11 and 12 when, my parents and a couple friends of mine were getting into it, got us a membership at some little goat track down my hometown. Very kid friendly. We would just go out there. They'd drop us off at 8 or 9 in the morning and I would play as many holes as I could. And then my mom would pick me up at 3 or 4 o'clock and I would go to like whatever baseball practice, or I'd go home and take a swim or whatever. And that's when I go back to like the 8 U's and like, that was my version for golf, of just going out there and just trying everything I could. Like I had a mixed bag of clubs. So I didn't have like, I wasn't like dialed in. I was just going out there just making swings and seeing how it flies and, you know, walking the golf course, playing with my friends. And then when I made the NHL through my junior career, I didn't play as much. And then when I made the NHL, I joined the club back home, the nice club that I'd grown up kind of around. And they had a scratch game like Monday through Friday, 7 a.m. all summer long. No need to like reserve a spot or text, just like show up 6:30, basically pick two names out of a hat as two-man teams, and there'd be like 12 of us out there, no shots. And I was like I was probably an 8 handicap, like something like that around then. So I got beat up pretty good. Like I could shoot 79, 78. Some of those guys are shooting 66 and 67 and 70. So I was donating a lot of cash, you know. And then, but the good thing about it was I played with those guys so much, and then I would go to the range after and I would just kind of like try and work at it. And after about two summers of not only watching them play, that like because getting down to scratch is like, it's a lot. It's just as much, you know, course management and knowing things like where to miss, where not to miss, understanding how putts break, getting the speed right, not three putting, all of those things. Those are the things that I started to work on because my ball striking was always pretty good. And then I was able to kind of get it to the point where I was scratch. And really now I had a couple summers, I would say right like about 10 years into my career before I hurt my hand where I was good. Like I was able to go out there and shoot numbers like sub 70s. And then I got hurt and then I went back up to like a 4 or 5 handicap. Excuse me. And that was challenging. Like it's challenging because, you know, as a golfer, you're always on an upward trajectory. Like you're getting better all the time. And then it gets to a point where like, if you regress, your confidence with every shot just gets completely shattered. So it was a lot of work for me to have to try and to come back and shoot those scores regularly. And I was able to do it the last couple of years. The last year has been great because I've played year round for the first time. So I never had that 8 month break where I had to come back and figure it out for a month. And so I got myself in a position to play in the State Open and didn't play great. But since then, I've been getting better and I'm in a place now where I'm, you know, I went out the other day and I think I made 7 birdies and an eagle. So I'm like at the point where I'm,
What happened to the other 11?
Yeah, I made like 2 bogeys.
Still posted right yet.
Pars. I posted, yeah, pretty good. Luckily in New York, you can't post between, you know,
and the Washington. I was just going to say, I better see that one.
It's not on there. And it's not, you know, if I go out there and shoot 66, I'm kind of reluctant to post it because, you know, you play in these net events and you show up there as a plus 3.5 and you know, unless you shoot 62, you're not even close to the money. So I keep it around 0 plus 1, something like that. If I shoot 70 or above, it'll get posted. And I don't shoot 66 that often, but you know, when I do, it's you know, when you show up as a plus one, like, and you go and shoot 69, no one's giving you a hard time. It's just they're not gonna. And I remember I was a plus 3 with I brought Kyle Poso to a hoopie for a member guest. I showed up and they gave me, I was a plus 3 at the time. So I'm a plus 3.5 and I played James Nicklaus, who's now like in the top 10 on the Korn Ferry Tour in a 9-hole match with his old man. And I had to give him 2 shots. And I was like, I'm no longer, because he's a pro, right? They don't carry caps. They put him in as a scratch. So I'm no longer showing up to golf tournaments as a plus 3. It's just not going to happen. So
I've got such a vendetta against the pros that like don't have the handicaps. They just say like they never have to post. I'm like, dude, you've got to post. Like, I don't care if you're not posting your you know tournament scores for wherever you're playing. But like if you're back home playing, you have to post because like you'll get into these games and you know there's like, oh yeah, just throw me down as a plus 2. I'm like, man, you are a plus 5 or
yeah.
6 on like a bad day. We're not putting you in as a plus 2, and I go to grips with Wyndham Clark's caddy John Ellis all the time over this. I'm like, dude, you got to start posting. He's like, nah, just put me at you know what these guys are. I'm like, no, I'm not doing it anymore. Like,
it's not fair.
It's just not
fair. It's like me going to play for comparison. It's like me going to play a men's league game against somebody who played D2 college. You know, 10 years ago and me being like, yeah, we're about the same. Like we can go one-on-one and you know, you'll be fine, which we all know it's just not true. Like even a scratch, people think scratch golfers are like going to go out there and torch the world. It's like the average scratch golfer shoots 75 to 77 on most days, right? Like that's the definition of scratch. Their potential is to shoot 72. Their potential is to shoot 71. Now pros are going to shoot 69 and their potential is to shoot 62. Yeah. So if you compare those, we're talking about an 8 shot difference every single day. So you're just never going to, and when you're playing for money, like you're playing money games as a non-pro, you want to go in there with an honest index so that you can just have a good match with somebody. It's always frustrating when you play with a guy who carries a 12 cap and shoots 79. Like what am I supposed to do? oh, it's the round of my life, like this and that. Like I'm watching all of Yip Strickler stuff, which is hilarious.
So good, man.
Because of the foreplay guys, he's so good. And just these guys who show up at these tournaments and just shamelessly win every time. It's just like, why? Isn't that, it's not fun. It's like you want the competition to be as strong as you possibly can. Otherwise, you're just not going to get better as a player. You know what I mean? Like you want to have the ability to have to go out there and shoot a score to get in. Like it's just, I don't know. I don't understand the mindset behind trying to fudge it. Yeah.
It's like, well, it's because the guys that are like the sixes to 12s in that range, like they've probably either already conceded or realized like they don't want to put in the effort to get to a scratch. Like to your point, I mean, you've gotten there. I'm there like right now. And I know like what it took. It took years and a ton of, I mean, you name it. Like I've done everything, right? Like, fuck, I don't even know why I was talking to a mental coach for a little while because I was trying to figure out like, you know, how do I do this? Yeah. And like you get there and it's just a grind to stay there. And so for those guys that are in that like 6 to 12 range, it doesn't mean as much to them because like they're not going to try to get to a scratch. And they're like, man, if I'm a 6, but it shows that I'm a 10, like that's a massive difference, right? And then, you know, they can get their photo taken at the Barstool Classic or whatever it is. And like it's their Super Bowl, you know? So it's just, you know, they don't have maybe that same like competitive engine or something. I'm not speaking for everybody. Obviously, there are guys that probably do the right thing. But just when I see those posts, it's like the first thing that comes to my mind is like, oh, what do you know? It's a 6 or a 10 handicap that played like a 5.
Yeah.
It's just what it is every single time.
Yeah. But like generally speaking, I think guys are pretty good about it. Like in the New York area, when you show up and you play, you know, your regular Nassau and you're playing, you know, 2v2, it's like most times whoever plays well wins. Like there aren't that many guys, but in these events that are like, you know, money events or prestigious sort of member guests, especially in this area, like there's guys that just show up like they're the guy, right? Like they're the guy that people bring in because they're going to shoot a score. Like they're going to shoot net 62. And it's just like you're out there playing and you want to be competitive, but you're also like, you go in afterwards and you're like, man, I shot 69. And I'm like 4 shots off the lead. Like I'm 5 shots off, you know, as a scratch. And it's, you know, it can be frustrating, but, you know, more generally speaking, most guys do the right thing. And most guys, like you said, it's a good point. Like most guys just don't even care. They're just like, oh, I'll throw it in or I won't throw it in. It's the guys who play 100 rounds a year that like you want them to start posting.
Yeah. Well, and like, it's awesome too. When this is what I love about country clubs, like you join a good club, the club and like the players of the club are going to hold you accountable.
Yeah.
You know, like it's the guys that, you know, maybe haven't gotten into a good group or just nobody's holding them accountable and they just like haven't figured it out yet. I tell you what, man, you get to some of these country clubs and like you start playing, like guys will figure you out and they'll figure like out what kind of person and what type of player you are. And you just won't get invited to games or like you won't be able to play in events because like the pro will sit down and have a combo with you. And it's just, so I feel like, you know, for anybody out there, join a club real quick and you'll either have to make 2 decisions. 1, I need to like actually get better and I need to, you know, start doing this. Or 2, I need to be okay with where I'm at, but I need to do things the right way. Otherwise, I'm not going to have anybody to play with.
Yep. And it's good because like I play with the same guys pretty regularly. So their caps will fluctuate, right? Which is nice because they're diligent about putting it in. And, you know, and same with me, like I'll put mine in and then my cap doesn't really change. Like it's between +1 and 0.8, depending on how I'm playing at the time. But those guys will fluctuate from like a 5 index to a 9 index through the summer if they're playing well, not playing well. When they're a 5 index, they play worse because they know that they don't have the extra 3 shots. So they get beat regularly and then they start, the scores start to get worse because their confidence gets a little shattered because the winning is what makes them, you know, feel good. And then they go up to a 9, start winning again, and then they play better and they just bounce back and forth. So whenever they show up and I check, I'm on the way to the golf course and I'm checking the indexes of the guys that I know very well that I play with regularly. I'm like, I know I got a good chance today if he's at a 5.9, but if he's at a 9.8, I'm gonna have my work cut out for me today, which
what's your, you know, what's the it
should be.
Well, what do you guys play?
We play 50-50, 100 Nassau, auto presses down to, and $50 junk is the regular.
What's junk?
Junk is like the most sandies, greenies, birdies.
Oh, sure.
So
yeah, yeah.
Added together, it's just like a total sum of who has more over the course of the round in the two-man team is an extra $50. And then I also have a huge wolf game. That's my favorite game. That's the group we play with in the summer. Wally Zerbiak, the former Timberwolf, is the ringleader of that. He plays 200 or 300 rounds a year. The guy's a maniac. And so usually it's anywhere from 5 to 8 guys, and we go out and usually play about 27 holes, and it's, you know, $10 a dot. And some days you get your teeth kicked in, some days you have good days. And like the other day that when I made all those birdies was a wolf game. So I did well, but I was also playing against, two handicaps, 1 5 handicap and a guy who plays in Matt PGA events regularly. So he was playing to a +1 and I was playing to a scratch, and I went out there and just made birdies. And so you have good days. And then, you know, yesterday I was paying everybody out. So it's like,
yeah,
it's a fun game because it's so volatile. And there's a lot of action. There's a lot of guys, and you're always changing partners. So you kind of, you have to play well, otherwise you're paying out. The matches, the Nassaws are good summer country club game. Like you got your foursome, you know, you're going to have yourself a drink or two. It's good company. You play with the guys you like, and it's enjoyable.
Have you played Banker yet? Has anybody introduced you to Banker?
No.
Oh man.
No, I know. I feel like I know what Banker is. I played Hammer. I played Vegas. I've played.
Yeah.
Threes. What's Banker?
All right. So this is what we play. I mean, almost every time. I had a few Banker games with Oki this summer. It's kind of like our house game. And I feel like it's picking up more steam. But you have to understand that it can get out of hand quick if you don't know what you're doing. It's like a $10 bet can sound, you know, meaningless until it's not. So the way that it works, on every hole, there's the banker for the hole. And you're playing, that banker is playing individual matches against the other three in their group, right? So to choose the banker on hole one, it's whoever has the lowest score. And the tiebreaker to choose who the banker is on the next hole is always longest putt. So if we're on hole one, I've got a 10-foot birdie putt and I make it, and you've got a tap in birdie putt. We don't owe each other any money. It's just to figure out who becomes the banker for next hole. So on hole two, how it works is the banker always gets to set the max denomination that people can play them for. So
Okay. If
you say $100, now I've got three players I'm going against. Cal, you can say $10. Wally could say $20. And Oki could say $100, maybe because he gets a bump on me that hole.
Yep.
And when you go play, the banker is just playing three individual matches against those players. And so it's a zero-sum game, right? Like if I win $20 from Cal, he's +20. I have -20, same thing with the other players. Now here's where it gets fun. You can double your tee shots while they're in the air. And if you birdie, it also doubles.
Okay.
And that's about it, right? So let's say you play me for 10, Wally's for 20, Oki's for 100. They all hit on the fairway or wherever, and nobody doubles. As a banker, and I step up and I double my bet, now I'm playing you for 20, Wally for 40, Oki for 200. And then if I birdie, you're 10 to 20, now goes to 40. Wally's 20 to 40 goes to 80. You see? And then at the end of 18, it's just a zero-sum game.
So you just add up your totals individually? Like, would you go on your scorecard and just do how much you were up and down?
How much you're up and down, and all four numbers are always going to equal. So like you'd be plus, you know, $70, I'm -80, the other two guys, it's all going to equal zero, and then you just figure out, you know, who owes who.
That is fun. I'm gonna introduce that. That's fine. So you have to double when your tee shot is still in the air.
Yeah, but you don't have to double, right? It's just, you know, if you're hit.
But if you're going to.
Exactly. Yeah. And then the last
wrinkle, if you're on a par three and you got one like flagged,
God,
and
you double it, to it,
and it flies the green, you're like, oh, I'm in one.
Yeah, you beat me to it. The one thing with par threes you can play is that it triples.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
So 10 can go to 30, can go to 90 before you're even walking up to the green if both the player and the banker tripled.
I love that. That's great. Like, so you're, as the banker, your strategy at when you're setting the limit has to be understanding how many gamblers you have in the group and
totally.
And how you're going to fare
totally.
On that particular hole.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
you can technically just, can you stand up as the banker and be like $10 max?
Yep. That'd be the minimum and the maximum. Yeah. You can just say $10 and put it at that. And so it's really good, like from the stance of if you do become bank, and the advantage of banker is that you're going last. So you've seen where everybody else's balls go. You know who's got strokes. You know who's doubled their tee shots, right? And you get to set what your minimum max is. So if, like, you know, guy that doesn't want to gamble, maybe isn't playing good that day, somehow became banker for a hole, keep it tight.
Yep.
So, when we play, that's what we're going to play. Because it does take, I'll say the only difficult thing about it is it takes the guy who's going to do the scorecard. And for your first couple times doing it, like,
yeah,
it's a big scorecard, right? Like, there's a lot going on. I've done it so many times now that it's just kind of second nature. But, you know, you're writing like plus minuses on every single hole. And then you got to keep track of the scores, the bumps. Everybody's looking to you like, hey, who's bumping here? Where am I at? What's going on?
Yeah.
You kind of got to get once you get past that, it just becomes super, super fun.
That's what we play pretty much every time we go out.
Do you go double scorecards? Like, do you do one scorecard for scores or do you do it all in one card?
I do it all on one. You got to get a fine tooth fine point pencil for sure.
Yeah.
Some guys will do double scorecards, but I like just to do it on one. And you know, if you're just doing like the $10, most guys are doing that. It's not going to get too crazy, but you know, guys will get down and start pressing.
Yeah.
You know, we had a hole once, we were way down, threw $100 out there. Two of the teams took 100. Somebody else took, I think, $20. Two teams had doubled their tee shots and then we doubled again. So before we even walked up the hole, you're at $400, 100,
yeah.
200. We double again, 400. And then we ended up making an eagle, which made it go to 1600. So that's like when it gets crazy, right? You're like, par three, but you'll love it. If you like to gamble and you like to play, it's a super fun game.
Yeah, that's definitely two things that I love most about golf is playing and gambling.
Yeah, I knew we'd get along great. real quick, I gotta ask, so in the State Open, so you said you didn't play well. What did you shoot? It was an 82, right, in round one?
Yeah, 82, and then I 82, 84, played both 2 days.
So I want to talk through the you know, there's not a game in the NHL you didn't play that like would make you more nervous than stepping up to the tee at, you know, the Open, right? And you're a scratch golfer, so like you can play. I just want to hear from your perspective because I've done this too. I think I don't even know if I broke 90 in our club championship first round last year, and I shot a 74 the next day. But like those things happen in golf, and I was just kind of curious, like, walk me through it. I mean, I'm sure you thought about it after the round and like what goes on, because clearly the skill level's there, but like some days it doesn't translate, and I just kind of want to talk about it.
Yeah, so I started really well. My front nine, I think I was three over par. I bogeyed the last three holes, so I was bogeyed two of the last three. I was kind of one under heading in, and I was kind of disappointed with my last two bogeys because they were kind of missed short putts. Now, again, the conditions out there were extreme. Like, we played it from 7,400 yards. It was a par 70. The rough was up 6 inches. It was at Glen Oaks, where they had the Northern Trust in 2017. And the greens there are very, very fast, very difficult. And so even if you were hitting it to 15 feet, you were rolling these birdie putts, thinking to yourself, let's just make par. Like, pars were at a premium. The winner of the tournament was even par. So, like, it was like, and these guys are, you know, these guys are good players. Like, Christian won it, Cavalier, and, you know, he was the Met PGA Player of the Year and, you know, won three tournaments on that circuit, including the State Open. And, you know, you play with these guys and they're still trying to become professionals, and they're like, you know, that's a different level. We talked about them being plus fives. Like, they really are. They don't miss. They get up and down from everywhere. Their swing just looks different. Their ball flight looks different. The ball just kind of floats to where it needs to go. And they're amazing putters. So for me, the big problem was I made the turn on the first day, and the 10th hole is a 525 yard par four, which is normally a par five. hit my ball left, tried to kind of hit like a, not a hero recovery shot, but I was trying to get more out of my recovery shot than I probably should have. And I ended up in a bad spot and just made triple. And then it was like, that was when I started to get nervous, because I was like, up until that point, I was just, I had no expectations for myself. So the first tee jitters were there, but it wasn't like insane. Like, I didn't feel paralyzed by it. You know, sometimes you've had shots where you're just like, your body just doesn't want to work. And so that's how like cold tops and like OB balls, like that's how it all comes into play. I wasn't like that until I made a triple. And then I was like, oh man, this could really get away from me here. Like, and it's not that you fear the embarrassment, but it's like, you know, a lot of people know that I'm playing in this. Some people are watching me. Some people are checking on the scores. I want to show well. I want to do well because I know that I'm capable from a abilities standpoint. And so that's when I started to think too much. And then just, you know, one bad swing after another. It just sort of like, it was just steady string of bogeys mixed a double in there and a triple. And then like next thing you know, you're at 12 over par and you're disappointed with your day. But, you know, at the end of the day, whatever it is, what it is. And then I went out the next day and just couldn't stop hitting my irons left. I was hitting everything left. Come to find out that I just put new irons in the bag about a week or two before. Come to find out after I went to the club fitter afterwards, I'm like, man, I think I'm putting good swings on these, but I'm losing them left. And he put them on the machine and he's like, they're like almost 2 degrees upright and you need them a degree flat. So he flattened him out for me and I haven't missed an iron left since. So I'm a little disappointed that I didn't have that figured out before I went in there, which is a lesson learned, obviously, because I hit the driver very well. And I normally do. Like, the driver is very consistent. You know, I probably hit 90% of my fairways. And if you're hitting 90% of your fairways, you should be able to break 80 pretty easily. Not easily, but like, you know, I just was having a lot of trouble. I was having a lot of trouble with my irons. And the problem was the holes were, the course was playing so long that a lot of the irons I was hitting in there were like, you know, 7 irons, 6 irons, 5 irons, 4 irons. And if you're losing those left, it's tough. Like by the second day, I was aiming 20 yards right, just hoping to God that I could just figure out the dispersion on the thing to try and get it somewhere near the flag. So it was a combination of those two things, but the nerves themselves were not that bad. They were definitely there, but a little better than I expected, to be honest. And that's definitely not the reason I went out and shot poor scores. It was just, I didn't have the right setup and once it got away from me, I wasn't grinding as hard as I should have. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, for sure. I've felt that more times than I would care to admit. And the other thing too is I don't think people realize with, you know, call it tournament golf or like golf at that level, clearly what you're playing at, like how different a course is once you get like 7,000 or over. And when they start tucking pins and, you know, they're rolling at 12, 13 or whatever they get them to, like just compared to your normal, even like an everyday country club that's in really good condition, like a few hundred yards and a couple more notched up on the stimp meter, and then everyone is tucked, you know, back left, back right, front right, whatever it is. There's not like very many middle pins.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a completely different game. And I think a lot of people like look at scores like that, just be like, man, what the hell happened? It's like, dude,
yeah.
You throw a little
come on out here and see, let's see, you throw a little wind
in there too. You're playing 500 yard par fours. It is just a completely different ball game. It gives you such a perspective too on how good the pros are. I hear guys talk about all the time, like, oh, you know, the PGA Tour make rates 50-50 from 8 feet, and I'm like, yeah, and that should give you a little bit of context for what you should expect, and not only realize that they're playing where every hole, like they're rarely putting when there's not break, they're rarely putting on greens that are like super slow, and not to mention they're playing on different like types of grass and greens every single week, which is really really underrated. Like I don't think people understand how different it is, you know, going out and playing in California and then going to Arizona like the week after where you're playing on this different type of grass and shit. There's just complete different levels to the game, right? And it gives you appreciation for how difficult it is.
It's so impressive to me that that those guys can go from place to place. And mind you, I was playing a place that I play at a lot. Like, I'm very familiar with that golf course. But to your point, I don't play it from that. We don't play it from there. Those are the back pro tees that I would love to play on a regular basis. But the guys I'm playing with, you know, it doesn't make sense. They don't hit it far enough. And not only that, like a 12 handicap from those tees goes to like, gets 19 shots. So it's like, do we really want to do that? Do we want to subject ourselves to that on a regular basis? Or is it one of those things where you do get four guys who are scratch, who hit the ball a mile? Those are the days you go back there and play. Like, you know, there's a course around here that I belong to that they've stretched it out to like 7750 from the back tees. It's like their championship, like setup, and they play. There's one event in October is a scratch event that I play in, and I and the club champs are played from back there for the championship division. And you know, it's just a different golf course. Like we play it from 6950 regular men's tees, big championship golf course, very very nice and playable from there for all skill levels. But when you go back there, man, it's just so different. You know, you're used to hitting wedges into certain pins and certain holes. Next thing you know, you get a 6-iron. You can't hit it into that hole location unless you're hitting like a dripping cut that falls in there, right? You can't attack that flag. You got to go for the middle of the green. Greens are humongous. You'll have 40 footers. You got to lag putt them, try to putt. It's just a different game. And so, you know, to me, it's good. And also what was great for me was it made me realize where the work like needed to be put in. Yeah. So like, you know, I compare myself to these guys, these pros that have been playing on the Mets circuit for 15, 20 years. And just to see how rounded their games are, everybody has their strengths, but their weaknesses, you know, if you were to ask one of these guys, well, my wedges are kind of my weakness. And, you know, and these guys are hitting wedges to like 12 feet, 10 feet, sometimes 5 feet regularly. You know what I mean? They're not hitting one left. They're not hitting one long. Their yardages are pretty, pretty dialed in. And so for me, it was really good because, like I said, after that, I really started to play good golf because I knew what was important and I knew where to work on the things. And so, and also your confidence goes up because you're like, I've done something way harder than this. So you show up on a Saturday morning to play a money game and you're like, you have like attack mindset versus like, oh shit, we're playing for a lot of money today. Like I'm a nervy little 5-footer to like, you know, have a hole doesn't have the same effect on my nerves as it used to, because I'm like, I've been way more nervous and in a position to be way more embarrassed than I am right now. So like this thing's going in the middle of the hole. And I started to make those consistently. I'm playing so much better because I just went through that experience and realized how important it all was. And so it was a great learning experience. I would suggest anybody who's a good player who has a chance to play, you know, metal golf or stroke play golf in an event, I would suggest you go out and do it because it'll make you better. It sucks in the moment because you have to look in the mirror and be like, there are holes in my game. And then you have to be honest with yourself about whether you want to improve them or not, it's a tough experience, but you come out way better on the other side.
Yeah. Like I still haven't even gotten over the hump of playing good tournament golf. I mean, I've played in our like Minnesota Mid-Am and made the cut a few years. I missed it this last year. I had a terrible season, but like, you know, I've played a couple good tournament rounds, but still like when it comes to the ones I seem to care more about, I haven't gotten over that hump. But to your point, like every single year I notice I get more and more comfortable and I show up with like a different mindset and feeling. And you're 100% right. And I tell anybody that'll listen, just like even once a year, go find, like you can in any state, they've got like state events you can sign up for. It's usually not even that expensive compared to what like public courses are charging nowadays. You can probably get a decent, you know, on a round and play a 5-hour tournament round where every single stroke counts and just see how different you feel over a 4-footer or even a 3-footer with a little bit of break. And then you'll come out of that. You might be a little bit embarrassed if you don't play well. And then if you do play well, like
great, just the
happy days.
We'll be sky high. So I completely agree with you. And this is the first year that I've actually, we went to Bandon for my bachelor party last year, and I showed up and, you know, I've got a 14K grind wedge. So, you know, like the sole,
yep,
this, and I was just skipping everything off of like the really firm. This is the first year that I've actually got two lob wedges now where I've got 6 degrees of bounce and 14 degrees of bounce. And I'm just going to swap it depending on conditions. Cause I'm like, I'm at that point now where it's like, where if I show up in firm conditions again with 14 degrees of bounce and I'm just like leading edge blading everything, like I'm done with it. And people don't realize the pros. I mean, I think they swap out their wedges depending where they're playing at, their grinds, their bounces. And so, you know, the more you play, the more you start to like put shit in your bag and get that repertoire and have a Swiss Army knife.
Totally. I use an extremely low bounce 60-degree wedge. I have 6 degrees of bounce, and I have one that's 4 degrees of bounce because I can't stand when I set that thing down slightly open that I could see that the leading edge is off the turf. It just drives me bananas. I can't do it. And, you know, in New York, not that many places are all that firm. Like it's you know, very parklandy. So I don't use my 60-degree wedge for many full shots. I'm more of like a greenside 60-degree wedge, and I can kind of control my 54-degree wedge, which has a little more bounce, like 8 degrees of bounce. But I can get a little steep with it and drive it in kind of low with my 54. So I don't really carry a big bounce 60 because it drives me crazy looking down at it.
So do you like, just knife that thing out of the bunker then?
Yeah, I have to chuck my hands at that thing with a ton of speed. And if anything's like, if I have like a longer bunker shot, I'll hit it with the 54-degree wedge.
Wow. Okay.
The 60 is for like, for me, it's like, I'll be like a back foot, sort of chaser when it comes to like, if I have a little room to roll, but the 60 for me is for like emergency use only. You know, it's like, I gotta flop one over a bunker. I gotta get a little cute around the greens. So that's really when I use it. But I used to use it for everything. And I just found that it was just not as consistent. I had trouble controlling my flight on the 50 yarders, the 60 yarders. And for me, however, like I hit the driver a long way. And when I'm playing these golf courses and in New York, there's not that much real estate. So a lot of these places are short, like 6,500 yards. So I'm pounding driver out there and I have like 62 yards. So I got 57 yards. And so, you know, you start chili dipping those regularly and you're like, what's going on? But you figure out sort of that the 54 requires a little less speed and it's a little more control to finish. So I started to just use that. But it's true. Like, you know, people will just go look at a golf club, especially wedges or irons, and be like, oh, this looks good. I'll put it in the bag. And to my point about my irons coming upright, you know, just because you order your clubs from the factory standard doesn't mean they come standard. Like they're not, it's not perfect. And so I went and got it checked out and I was just like, for a month, I was like trying to fix my golf swing. And it turned out that like the minute my clubs got bent down, I started hitting like 5 yard bleeding cuts with my irons. I haven't hit a cut with my irons in 5 years. And I'm like, oh, this is much more controllable. Now I stand over the ball and I can actually take a full swing at a golf ball without having that fear of it just like taking off, boomeranging left on me. So I would suggest any skill level, just go to your fitter, a good fitter, and just make sure that the clubs are giving you the best chance to play good golf because it matters. It really does. And it's funny you mentioned, yeah, you have to, because the clubs will start to like revert to whatever. And you got to make sure that the lofts are good. You got to make sure, especially if you play a lot and you're carrying those things around in your trunk.
Or if you're in the winter hitting off mats and like they have no give, they're just slowly bending every time you hit.
Yeah, they're bending them up. Yeah. It's funny you mentioned Bandon, because I had the hardest time out at Bandon playing. It was so different. You mentioned different conditions, different greens. I couldn't make a putt at Bandon. We played Bandon the first day. I made 18 pars and I hit 17 greens. And it was literally like, I can't tell you how many 5 footers I missed on those greens.
Yeah.
I just couldn't, to the point where on the second day I went into the pro shop and bought a putter because I was like, I couldn't even look down at my putter anymore. I just was totally miffed by those greens. And a lot of these putts are like, they're right edge putts. And it's like, it wiggles its way to the hole and just doesn't go.
Yeah.
And, you know, I come back to New York and the greens are rolling at like a nice 12 and a half. And it's just like, you get it started online, it goes in the hole. So it's,
Nothing better than a bent grass East Coast green that's just rolling, like you said, in like 11 or 12. And literally, as long as that thing starts online, you know it's got a chance. There's just nothing better.
Yeah, I put the full equator on my ball because I was a horrible putter for years, and I put a lot of work into it. So now it's actually a strength of mine. And on those greens, I put that equator lined up to my spot. If I hit that thing properly, that line just never wavers. It's just like it rolls perfectly, and I can tell the minute I hit it if it's in the hole or not, because it's just. There's just no blemishes, and the clubs around here are so awesome that those, like, a lot of them are like that all the time. And those bent grass greens with the shine on them, with a little bit of gray, and the lower levels got the dark green, and then the top level is all silver. It's sick.
All right, I got to wrap up. I got to ask now, because you're clearly a sicko. This has just been phenomenal. I could go on for hours, but I got to ask, what's in the bag? How often do you change, if you do? But then, like, walk me through the bag, and I want to hear about the putter, and I want to hear about the driver setup.
So the driver setup is, I've got the Paradigm Triple Diamond. I've been a Callaway driver guy for the better part of 12 years. I went, actually longer than that. My first Callaway driver was an FT9, which is like, we're talking like pre 2010. I had that thing forever. And then I went to
the Epic.
I went to
a lot of people. The Epic and the Maverick.
The Maverick, the Rogue, and then the Paradigm. And I haven't switched it. Triple Diamond, 8 degrees, standard. And I have the same shaft that I've had in all these Callaways. I haven't switched the shaft out at all. It's cut down an inch. And it's a Graphite Designs Tour AD DI7X.
Oh, yeah.
The Matsuyama special, yeah. And so that's my driver setup. I've got a 16-degree QI10 3-wood that has an Diamana 80-gram shaft in it. I love the 16-degree 3-wood because it gives me the ability to kind of hit it higher. Club I added this year, which has been huge, is a QI10 7-wood.
Nice.
Huge improvement, because the hole in my game, especially, I recognize as I was leading up to this tournament, it's really hard to hit. For me, it's really hard to hit 4-irons and 3-irons with enough loft. They're great clubs for tee balls in target golf situations, but when you got a par 5 and you've got a chance to go for it, it's like it's 230, and it's like I could get my 4-iron there, but I can't get it. I can't get the flight to the point where it's going to land kind of and sit. So you find yourself in back bunkers a lot, or hitting the face of front bunkers and getting lodged in there. And so the 7-wood I put in my bag, especially for longer rough too, like you could really just chomp down on that thing and get a solid 200 yards out of it, as opposed to a 4-iron. You're never digging out of there. You'd have to hit 8-iron out of there and take your medicine. 7-wood kind of gets me out. That has the same shaft as my 3-wood. And then
Did you have a 3-iron before, and you just went to 7-wood?
Yeah, I had a 790 TaylorMade.
Yeah, like
it wasn't iron. It wasn't the UD. It was like just from a set of 790s, but it was a 3-iron. But those things are so knuckly. Like I had a full set of them for like 2 days, and I hit my 8-iron like 190 yards.
Dude, and it's like a no. If you play a 3-iron, it's like a no brainer to go to 7-wood for 99% of people.
It's unbelievable. I resisted it for a long time, and then the minute I hit one, I was like, I looked at the trash list, and I was like, that's what I need right there. It's the same yardage. The spin rate's like relatively the same, and my apex is like 30 feet higher. We'll put this in the bag. And then 4-iron through pitching wedge are the Strixon ZI, what are they? ZIX7?
ZX2M7.
Yeah. The 7s, which I love because they look like they look like a player's club when you look down at them, but they're not. They've got nice feedback, good spin rates. The shafts in those are C-Taper 130s, KBS Tours. And then I've always been a Vokey wedge guy. So I got a 54 degree and 60 degree.
We got a similar setup.
Yeah, with the KBS, I put the KBS Tours in those too. I'm still trying to figure out the wedge shaft setup because there are times around the greens where I don't love how heavy my wedges are.
Are they the same? Are they the same? You said they're the same shafts as your irons, or are they just the?
Yeah, the same shafts. They're the C-tapers.
And then are they extra
wedge
stiff
version? They're extra stiff.
So I play the Nibon. I play the 105 X's in my irons, and I play the 105 S's. But if I didn't do that, and I had heavier irons, like if I had the 120s in my irons, I would play 105 X's in my wedges and 120 X's in my irons. So I feel like it's either one of the two. You play the same weight, and then you take the stiffness out for wedges, or you play higher weight X in your irons, and then still X in your wedges, but reduced weight.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm at the point where I feel like the wedges are slightly heavy when it comes to just trying to pitch feel shots. Yeah. But I need the I need the 130s in my irons. It just kind of like, it allows me to slow down a little bit, especially when I was playing hockey. I was like obviously pretty strong. And so with lighter irons, like it's almost like my hands get too quick to the ball, and it just doesn't really like they don't match up very well. And in rough conditions, like I could feel like, I don't like when I could feel the club bending in my hand, like hitting irons. Like if I hit a rental set of irons that are just like normal stiff or whatever, and I'm you know, hitting a nine iron, I'm pretty like, I like to like kind of like cover it. I'm like a big dollar bill divot, like an inch after the ball guy. And like what if I'm hitting one and I could feel that thing bending out when it's going through the turf, it like just doesn't, I hate that feeling. So I like the rigidity of all of it. And I get enough, like the flight's good on them too. I don't hit those balloony spinners with the heavy ones. I just feel like it allows my timing at the bottom to be better than the lighter ones. But again, with the wedges, like when I'm trying to hit like a little 40 yarder, the club just like, it feels a little heavy. And if I hit it flush, like it just kind of, it comes off hot.
So maybe just go down a step and wait and then keep the same stiffness.
I'm gonna try that because I'm due for new ones. My grooves are all worn as shit.
Yeah, because I was talking with my buddy who used to play professionally, and he said he's a very big proponent of keeping the same profiles of shafts, right? That like you can tinker with weight and stuff for, but like the second somebody goes from like having, you know, tapers in their irons, and you go and have a completely different shaft of your wedge, and they have all different kick points, and like some are stiffer in the handle and some are, you know, softer in the tip.
Yep.
Keep the same profile and just kind of mess with, you know, the weight and stiffness.
That's probably the right play.
Yeah, that's the it's so funny. The kick point is such a big thing. Even for me, like playing hockey too, like hockey sticks, like the kick point is everything. People just think like, ah, whatever. Like I got a extra stiff shaft. It's like, well, I have stiff shafts that I've tried in drivers that I can't hit. Like I'll balloon them, I'll blow them right, I'll snap hook them, just because the timing of that thing and where that thing's flexing out just doesn't match up with where I'm at. I need something that's like mid torque to like handle high.
That's exactly what I told Oki, dude. He has that's why he hits it a mile right, because his kick point, like you can see it. I videoed his swing.
Could see it like lagged out.
Yeah, I told him like, dude, we need to get you a shaft that's like so stiff in the tip that you can't do that, because like his swing is actually pretty good. But like you can just see it, and he has so much power. I'm like, dude, look at this thing. It has no chance to square up. Like we got to get you fixed. So
he's got to cut it. He's got to tip it. Like they got to go like the DI7X that I had was tipped from the bottom. So if you're gonna go, if you're one of those guys that swings hard and you just can't find one that's stiff enough, like I got another Paradigm, the non-triple diamond, but I put the Ventus Tour 8X in there, the one that Rory uses, and I was like, oh, this is going to be great. Like I could go after this thing. It doesn't even respond the way that I want it to respond. Like I actually like lost some distance because it was so rigid that like it just wasn't giving me that feedback.
Yeah.
But if I tip the 7X down from the tip of the shaft instead of the butt, you get that like rigidity that you're looking for, without sacrificing the whole flex of the shaft.
And totally.
So a buddy who was playing competitively told me that like, wow, that was like 12 years ago. He used to work at the golf shop. He tipped it out for me. And ever since then, I haven't missed a driver.
Yeah, man. The pros get like the access that they have to those little things that matter so much in golf, like on tour vans and stuff. Like it's hard to even comprehend for like the average golfer who just walks into Superstore or Dick's or whatever and grabs one off the rack. It's like, dude, they're swapping out weights and like, you know, their heads are specific degrees. Like it's not, I get that it's quote unquote the same driver Rory uses, but it's not the same.
But it's not. It's not. It's not. And like you can't even, it doesn't matter to you until you're good enough to put a consistent swing on the golf ball on a regular basis. Like, you know, to go in and have a 16 handicap, you could do the flex on the shafts and all that to try and improve them. But until you start swinging the same way, like 90% of the time, those little minuscule tinkering things you won't notice the difference, because like if you put a bad swing on a golf ball, it's a bad swing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like it just happens. So it matters once you start to get better. And this is again what I learned at State Open. I went to, I'm like, check the loft on those things, check the lie angle, and sure enough, like there you go, there's your answer. And it's crazy how far down the rabbit hole you can go.
I've been there. I don't even know if I've come out yet. So what's the flat stick? What are we rocking?
Flat stick is the Spider Tour X. Nice, like original so Spider, good, best putter ever made.
Yeah.
I had an old original Spider X white one, and I was going through every putter in the bag. Like I have two tour bags sitting right here. I have a simulator right here. I have two tour bags sitting there. With I counted the putters. I have 21 putters sitting in those tour bags right now. Everything from like the Jailbird long 38 incher to like a long lab golf. I have a short lab golf. I have the big head lab. I have the Fang lab. I've got four Scotties, and none of them ever produced the results that I was really looking for. And what I came to find out was that what for me more importantly is the hosel of my putter. I have that little slant neck on the Spider, and the length, I went down to 33 and 3/4 inches, and I'd never had one that was any shorter than 35. And I found myself like, I didn't realize it, but when I was trying to putt, I was like, you know, you're trying to like rock the baby. And when you're sitting there, like trying to become a better putter, you're watching these videos and it's just like, lay your arms at your sides. Like I'm tucking my shirt in. I'm trying to like keep myself. It just turns out that at 35 inches, the way that I comfortably would set up over the ball, it didn't allow for, like, it wasn't an extension of my arms. So now I have this tiny little putter and I just kind of like lay it behind the ball with my right hand, line it up with the line of my ball, and I can, it flows freely now. And I can't tell you how much better I've become at rolling the rock with the, I'll never put another putter in the bag. Even if that one, like something happens to it, I'm going to go right. I know exactly where I'm going. I'm going right back to TaylorMade and Spider X at 33.75 inches and slant neck.
Yeah, you better get that like head weight and swing weight too, so you really get it.
Yeah,
and you got to replicate.
Yeah.
It.
So I might even like just take it into the fitting shop and just be like, can you make me like two more of these just so I have them?
Yeah,
you know, like because you never know when they're going to change. I don't know if TaylorMade's going to go away from the Spider. That's just like such a good putter. It just kind of has a little bit of everything. But if they do, I don't want to get stuck on eBay trying to find old Spiders, you know, if I need one.
Yeah. No, I love it, man. You're one of us when it comes to the golf sicko world. So it was, I said I would take like 30 to 40 minutes and I realized pretty quick we were probably going over an hour. So I know you got you're heading downtown today. I appreciate it. I'll let you go get to your nap.
Yeah.
And I look forward to staying in touch. I don't know when we're going to play together, but I got a feeling it'll be hopefully sometime this year and we'll get a good banker going.
Yeah, that would be awesome. You're always welcome to come down here. If you're in the area, if you're in New York, I'd love to take you out. And I've been trying to get out there to see Kyle for a couple of summers. I feel like this summer might be the one. So I'll be down in your neck of the woods too, I'm sure, for hopefully a good 3 or 4 days. Maybe I'll bring the kids and the family and let them hang out and we can go play some golf. I got to go check out Winsong's new, new 18 holes, right? You guys, I've seen the pictures and Kyle sent me the drone footage and he said it's pretty epic. So I got to come check that out.
Yeah, it's so good, man. It's a little bit more playable, definitely more walkable. But it, you know, don't let it fool you. Like you tip it out, you know, hole one, I'm hitting 6 iron into there, and then hole 18. I mean, I don't know if I've hit less than 5 iron, when I'm playing from the tip. So, you know, a lot of people are like, oh yeah, it's a short course. It's like, no, it's not a short course. It just has 6 par 3s. But if you took 2 of those par 3s and made them par 4s, it's just as long as, you know, any other course around. So, it's phenomenal. They did such a good job. It's so fun. And it with 6 par 3s playing banker, when you can triple those, that gets fun.
So fun. I mean, I love those courses that have that sort of like match play feel to them, where it's just like there's a lot of volatility, some drivable par fours, some risk reward. It's not just like straightforward bomb it, hit 9 iron into the green. I love the little variety.
Yeah, there's a ton of it out there. So I'm looking forward to it. We'll keep in touch, and hopefully when you come back, we can get out and play.
Totally.
We'll introduce you to the banker, man. So have a good rest of your day. I appreciate it, Cal. It was great.
Thank you, buddy. You got it, man.
See ya.